That's almost like heavy bolters were before the upgrade.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Whale of All Souls Podcast. I'm joined this evening by Adam Camilleri.
Evening everybody.
And Dustin Henshaw.
Hello everybody.
This is a Thursday show invasion here, if you don't
Thursday
know. We also do a show on the Frontline Gaming Network called The Thursday Show, where we talk about tournaments coming up over the weekend, and we talk a little bit about the list and stuff. And this is the crew that we also have been doing it recently over there. And we're recording this on an odd date, and I thought, why not? Let's just keep that Thursday Show train running. And here we are talking about stuff on Forge the Narrative.
And my dear, oh my, we have some stuff to talk about.
We had so much stuff to talk about, we couldn't even cover it on the Thursday show, so this is the perfect time to just continue with it.
There you go. Dustin, you got a podcast of your own as well, right?
I do. I am part of the Stutter Scrub podcast.
Which part?
The main part. This podcast I started with a buddy of mine, Jesse, that we originally started as kind of like a journeyman's journey of us trying to make the Canadian WTC team. So originally it was us like doing everything we could to try out for it, and then I made the team. So now it's just kind of more talking about current competitive events in 40K, the current meta, and just lists in general. And we just go on and talk about 40K because that's the best way to do it. Right, Paul?
Oh, yeah. Well, exactly right. Thanks for pitching in for us here on this show today. I really appreciate it. Tanya and Red will be back next week. Although next week, I'm actually going to be on vacation. So we're going to skip one cycle, and then we'll be back.
Everybody will miss you this cycle.
How dare you?
How can you not give us something every week, twice a week?
Okay.
What is wrong with you, Paul?
To also, if people would like to tune in and hear some stuff, I will be doing commentary for the Games Workshop U.S. Open in New Orleans coming up that weekend. So the day that you would normally get a release of Forge the Narrative, you can tune in to the Wyrmer TV Twitch stream, and I'll be talking there.
Yeah, so that's going to be a crazy awesome event, and I'm happy it's still taking place, and I'm happy that they've gone through what they have, because I mean, of course, we know what's happened in New Orleans in the last couple of weeks, last couple of months. Things are very much in a stage of recovery, and you know, some people have been saying, oh, they should know better not you know, put on something like this, and I'm saying, if you can do it safely, that's what the place needs.
Well, you know, exactly right. Yeah. And the places, you know, that was a big concern. And they were mm-hmm. very open about, yo, if the place is not in a condition to do it, or, you know, there's no power, or the city is not recovered to a sufficient state or whatever, they were going to cancel it and refund everyone's tickets. I mean, wasn't even any questions asked kind of thing. But yeah, it looks like things are in a good state.
Not only in addition that they're bringing hundreds of people there to inject, you know, currency and put boots on the ground at, you know, things like restaurants and businesses, they're donating a portion of the proceeds to local charities. Is that correct? Recovery funds?
I think it's going to be a good event, a good spirited event, and also people coming to the event. We know they've got a lot of heavy hitters, and so it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out, and if we see a trend continue like we had in Orlando, or if people have adjusted to what they've seen.
Yeah, it's what I'm really keen to see is how things have adjusted, exactly like you said, from that new, because it was such a new format for people the first time they're playing it through in Orlando, that there will be absolutely some meta adjustments, if not from people who've played in Orlando and are coming to this one, but also from people who have just seen what the results were. Hey, a lot more of my aggressive armies have better agency here. The lines of fire aren't as brutal as we thought. Knights actually can hang. Like some of these bigger, you know, more skewed lists can actually do okay. Things like, you know, not so much the Stomper because that's fallen off with the new codex, but things like, you know, Lords of Skulls, Knights, these bigger things that, you know, maybe people see as a bit of a joke or a gatekeeper and other ones can actually have a much far better result on these tables.
All the new stuff you can do with this terrain, even bringing fortifications, it just unlocks so many more tricks you can do. And you'll see so many different armies come out that you wouldn't see before. Units, tactics, there's just so much more. And it makes the game a lot more interesting to me. Because you can't complain about the terrain. You can't say, oh, well, the terrain screwed me. It's like, well, you did that.
Be careful, gentlemen. Be careful, gentlemen. The reason I say that is because I was asked just for some commentary on, you know, kind of what we saw from the trends in Orlando and what we might see in New Orleans. And there's been a lot of people like, how dare you say that? How dare you say that the terrain influenced maybe what people will take? How dare you say some of these things that it might open up the range to different armies? Like, are you being blind and to the meta, to what is actually going to be taking kind of thing.
And look, I don't think you're here to say, oh, Drakari, Admech and Sisters aren't good on this terrain. You're just saying they're still the best factions in the game, but stuff like Guard, Knights have a bit more agency. Necrons can hang a little bit better than they could in other places. And that's kind of the reason it's been designed this way, mm-hmm. right?
Well, and Grey Knights too. I think the armies that relied on midfield control that never got to develop their strategies during the game because of some of the dominance of these other long range factions that we've seen, the door is at least at the very least cracked for them.
Yeah, what I do like about it a lot is from what I could see, because the middle of the table is a bit more open, is a bit more contestable for a lot of players. You see it in some other formats. Oh, cool, I'm going to pick around this corner with this unit of Plasma Inceptors, and I'm going to absolutely wreck your unit in the middle of the table, your, you know, 20 Necron Warriors. And there's nothing that you can get into position to come back and respond and pick them up in return. So effectively, we're not getting a trade. You're just losing in this equation. I see a lot less of that on the GW terrain, for what it's worth.
So what we saw was that the players that really understood the dynamics of the terrain did the best. And I don't mean, you know, just the overall winners. You know, there's the way they've got it, there's bracket winners, and the people had more success if they really paid attention to the terrain.
Dustin, what are your thoughts on the bracket format? Because this is another thing that's pretty unique. Well, not wholly unique to that. I mean, I think the gentleman who's running it, Mr. Brandt, brought that with him from the Nova format, which was for great success and a very long-standing venerated event it was. But Dustin, what are your thoughts on the little pods and the breakdowns and things?
I actually kind of like that too. You want to explain it to everybody that's listening to? I'm sure most people that listen to, if you're listening to this, you know what's going on. But
if you go for it if you want to explain it.
No, you're better.
After a certain amount of rounds, you're then kind of separated and you're playing against people with similar win records to you. So there are multiple ways to come away with a victory, some recognition or whatever. It's not just top 1, 2, 3 or something at this tournament. So there's reasons to play deeper into the rounds, even if you've had a rough couple of goes in your first round.
It's continuing to give impetus to people. Like let's say you have like 2, 3 really bad rounds. You're going to be playing. So essentially that event closes up and you get put into a pod with people who have the same win-loss rate.
You're playing in the tinfoil bracket, but you're still in a bracket.
Mm-hmm. But you're still in a bracket. There's still something to play for. There's still a little bit of a bragging rights, a bit of pride that you can leave with, you know, at the end.
And I'm actually of the feeling, like, you've come for the weekend, you might as well play all your games anyway, but I like the fact that they built in that little incentive, because it's cool. Like, look, you know, it is cool to come away with something, but it's also cool to be playing for something, across all different win paths. You know, there are multiple different win paths. You can just reassess what your success looks like for you depending on how your first few rounds went.
It's a great way of knowing where you're at as a player, as a competitor.
That's a good point. I actually like
to
that.
Really, because a lot of people really struggle to assess how, like, you know, how strong they are as a player, where they're good, where they're bad, where their strengths and weaknesses are, especially playing with different factions. Like you could literally be the best Necron player in the world, but if you only play against Drakari, you know, Dark Elder, Admech, Sisters, Orc players, you're not going to feel very good about that, you know. Like it's not going to feel the same as, you know, playing in a very diverse field where you feel like you can shine. And so I feel like that's what this does. It puts you in a place where you get to shine regardless of where you are in the, you know, the gamut of, you know, top tier, lesser tier, middle tier, whatever. You get chucked in with the guys or ladies who are doing about the same as you, and you get to see what the pecking order is like for yourself, and you actually get to see how you stack up against people who are around as good as you. And I find it's really good. I feel like everyone should do one or two. I'm not somebody who wants to do the same event every year. I don't want every format to be like this. Just so that, like, I don't want every format to be the GW style terrain or the Frontline Gaming one or whatever you want. But I like doing one or two of these in a year because it lets me keep my finger on where I'm at in the edition and where I'm at and where I think I'm at and where I'm actually at correlate. Because I could find, I'm speaking from personal experience with myself and friends of mine, sometimes it doesn't always match up.
Like sometimes. Sometimes
you just be having a bad day, man. But you hit on a point a second ago that I actually do love the fact that there is flexibility in how organizers can arrange these events to make a unique experience for people, you know, to travel to different things. Now, are there some commonalities? Yes, of course, that I'd like to see. But at the same time, I like it that the organizers, and it's part of what we've, you know, done our last couple episodes with culture and those types of topics is how to give the people in your area the fun that they want and maybe you attract folks from different areas as well.
Yeah. I actually really like the bracket system for a lot of the points that Adam hit on too, because it gives you a pulse on where you stand, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable for everybody to get into the hobby and go into these tournaments. So they're not going to be afraid, oh, I'm going to go there and just get my butt kicked, you know, five rounds in a row. It's like, no, you're going to get paired against people eventually in your own bracket. You'll feel a lot better about it. You'll enjoy the game a lot more. And I'm an esports fan. I love the esports, and I like the idea of having the same kind of bracketing system that we do with a lot of those kind of systems. And I like to see that in 40K.
Bracketology.
Yes. I love it. I love seeing it. Like, but I'm still the same mindset that Adam was saying. I don't want to see it at every tournament, but I love the fact that a couple of them are going to start doing it. Like, and I like that. It's going to be bringing more people into the hobby. I think it helps with that.
I actually love it. So in tournaments I've run in the past, you're very instituted that they're not just one winner of the tournament. There are yes. four equal winners of this tournament, exactly. kind of thing. And then there's brackets, you know, whatever. I like to incentivize people. I like to have a deep prize pool, but that's not even always like the prize itself is not always necessarily realistic for everything, but recognition is something you can do. And yeah, that's it. But with, I really think that, you know, especially we've seen of the numbers of factions represented across the different tournaments that we've all been kind of looking at recently, I really do think this is going to be a Grey Knight time to shine. Grey Knight and Orc are really going to be able to benefit from the ability to get out there in that mid-range of the table and do things to pull off your tricks.
I 100% agree on the Grey Knights call. I think this, if I had to call the podium right now, if the call in the top five, I'd almost be willing to say two Grey Knights in the top five for this.
Wow. Event,
because of how well aggressive Marines have done in the last one. And I feel like Grey Knights are possibly one of the best versions of aggressive Marines that we have, just because they have that, while they don't have the resilience of, say, you know, a Storm Shield or a Blade Guard or a explosive ability that you see from things like Incubi, and they're actually ridiculously potent, and I think they're going to be very hard to account for on this terrain, very hard to trap anywhere with things like Gate, with things like Shunt. They're just going to be able to be wherever they want on these tables, and when they want to hide, they can hide. When they want to be out, they can be out. I think they're going to be very hard to account for, and I'm very keen to see, because they're like T-Suns and Grey Knights have started making a big splash, and I was really hopeful that they would, because I'm going to put it right out, the psychic phase just seemed to be a little bit of a joke up until this point.
Not, well, it wasn't a player. We didn't have any armies that they could really bring that psychic might, or that was weaved into their actual strategy. You had, well, one, you had Marine players opting for things like chaplains.
Exactly right.
And or you just had one or two librarians hanging out, and things like, you know, Tyranids have been taking a back seat.
Yeah. Tyranids on a little bit of the decline. Even though Tyranids have, between Tyranids and GSC, they have one of the deepest pockets when it comes to psychic powers. We just didn't see a psychic powerhouse able to hang, like able to actually go and make the psychic phase really matter. Because, I mean, we thought up until this point, we really thought, you know, all the chapters that have got those 5+ feel no pains against mortal wounds in the psychic phase, you're like, eh, whatever. I'd rather have the one that lets me punch better or shoot better or move better. And now all of a sudden you're like, well, T-Suns are going to give me like 35 mortal wounds in a phase. Taking a third off that would feel pretty good, wouldn't it? That's the difference between, you know, this whole 9-man unit of Scarabs being there and not being there. So
yeah, I'm still like, I don't know if it's the psychic phase itself that's so weak, or is it just the units that you have to bring for it? Are the characters that can't get in the position you want them to get into, or is it just that people don't think that the psychic is doing as much as it should?
So to my mind, it wasn't doing as much as it should. The damage output from the armies that could do it weren't even like, so you talk about like Tyranids, yeah, who were one of the best prior to T-Suns.
Absolutely.
They were one of the best mortal output ones. You had the Psychic Scream, you had the Smite, you had the Super Smites if you wanted to go for it with the rerolls and etc. You had, was it the Shard? What was the Shard called that gave you, whatever, the Broodlord one. that gave you better casting and all those things.
Oh,
and
you mean the Resonance Barb?
Resonance Barb, the Sanctic Shard. I was thinking of, because that's the Grey Knight one that does a similar.
Different group of folks.
Absolutely different group of folks. different side of the country. But even them, like, you know, one unit of Hive Guard, you could spend 600 points to try and make the psychic phase matter, or you could spend 200 points on unit of Hive Guard that would do the same amount of damage for less points, just a couple of CP instead. Mm-hmm. And so that was the equation. And then when you looked at what you could get for psychic phase, and for the ones who did have a strong psychic phase, some of the Marine factions have very good psychic trees, but then you looked at, and like, you're like, well, this Litany tree is just kind of better. At times it's more reliable with Master of Sanctity, and it can't be stopped, can't be interrupted, can't be denied, can't be turned off by a Calexis or a Sister of Silence. And like, well, this is just better. And so now we've seen people have to stand up and account for it. Like, I mean, I'm dusting off the Kalexis's boys. Like, if I'm going to a tournament soon, I want that Pokeball.
Really, man. With what I'm bringing to tournaments recently, I just feel like I'm just going to be removing models.
Yeah, exactly right, too. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're a huge proponent of this, Paul. But you love your little Rhino. You love your Impulsor. You love those things that aren't very high value targets that are can be very annoying pieces when your opponent doesn't want to spend resources removing them.
Yeah, you blink a turn for your opponents. You know, if you get any advantage for your army and you can blink a turn, then it's you stacks on stacks, you know.
Exactly, and you run those little buggers in front of your lines with that fire. Some factions have the 5+ feel no pain strat against mortal wounds as well, and all of a sudden your, 10-wound Rhino can soak up 13, 14 mortal wounds, and it's huge for 80 points. Very nice. Land Speed of Storm is another good option for Space Marine players. Chimeras for Guard. I'm not sure what Nids would have available to them, but of course Goliaths and things are very attainable for GSC. Also, it's not the Ridge Runners.
75 points for a Goliath, if I remember right.
75 yeah, stock, yes.
The Ridge Runners come with a Feel No Pain, don't they?
If they take a Flare Launcher, which you generally do because the six Feel No Pain is just awesome. So yeah, generally. Yeah.
That's a pretty bit of a bargain buy there, and plus they add some very nice long range firepower.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for Tyrion, is to answer your question there, they would want to just take like Leviathan with some hordes because then they get a 6+ Feel No Pain.
That's true.
They're very, very good at dealing with that. And you're nailing a lot of things on the head with that. I used to run a lot of Zoanthropes with my when Psychic with the Tyrannus was so good. But then I started, it was good because of all the elite stuff out there. There's so many invulns out there that it was hard to get through. But now that invulns are becoming less and less of a problem because they're not like 3+ everywhere, 4+ are the best you're going to get. And usually you can get some good AP1, AP2, plus the terrain. The terrain is getting a lot better, so it's harder to get to the targets you want to get to.
Yeah.
So the line of sight thing is another big reason for it. So I think you're
is that what you mean by better terrain? Is that there are more tables have actual line of sight blocking features on them?
I'm gonna say yes, but it's more like because it gives you more options to maneuver. So yeah, because of the line of sight blocking, you can maneuver your armies better and make sure you're not going to lose the things that you don't want to lose to, like the smite powers and all these really, really strong things that once they see you, you die just by looking at you, right?
Yeah, spot on. I'm trying to figure out what like Harlequins and Craftwood Elder have that they can use to do that. I mean, I suppose like there's 13 wounds on a Wave Serpent, but that is an expensive piece to just throw up there for the mortal catching.
Maybe, you want Guardians for that, though. You just...
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. What's the cheapest like body you can just put in there? Is it like a Allying some Razorwing box or something silly like that? It's Guardians.
You make them old way. I think they can get a Feel No Pain and mortal wounds. I think.
Yep. I believe so.
There you go. There's your answer.
Look, don't laugh at Guardians if they're in the right situation.
Oh no, they're no, dumping I would tons. Never. I would never. Black Guardians are scary, man. They are scary.
Terrifying. I remember the first time I lost a Baneblade to 20 Guardians, and I was like, huh. The guy's like, yeah. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, baby. I'm like, explain.
but Eldar are actually one of those factions to where you can take decent quality Psykers. And you can't rival, I don't think, the damage output of the Grey Knights or whatever, but you could block maybe a couple of smites, and that might be enough to make that Guardian squad live a little bit longer.
There's also a bunch of keynote powers. A lot of grown-up players are starting to factor in, like the shoot in the psychic phase and then bug out. Like if you can shut that down or have the potential to shut that down, that's just taking a tool of reliability out of their little toolbox, which is very good.
Things they're counting, a lot of the time, they're counting on getting that stuff.
Yeah, because that lets them, like, they jump out, shoot a screen, and then gate something into the hole, and lets them get rods, lets them get engaged in all fronts, lets them get really good lines of fire when they want to get it. And shutting those things down, or having the propensity to shut them down, is sometimes enough to do the damage already. But yeah, I'm Kalexis, baby. I'm polishing them off. They're a bit dusty, but back on the table, I think.
Well, what about like Sisters of Silence?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. If you're playing Custodes and you don't have a Kalexis or Sisters of Silence, like you're looking at possibly like having two Talamons a turn dead in the psychic phase. That's just, you can't. You just can't like let that be a thing. But look, Custodes have a lot of opportunities to ally in things. Like take a blob of 30 conscripts, chuck it in front of your stuff. Cool, you know? Mm. A little bit of the problem solved, because there's no real downsides to doing that is what I'm saying.
No, you're not really losing one, they don't have a lot of points. And so you're not, you're probably not offsetting yourself that many Custodes if you are doing something like that.
you've probably got enough points in the Misericordias that you chucked on because you got 70 points left and it can't buy you another body. Just shake all the Misericordias off. Platoon commander, company commander, put a patrol with 30 conscripts in it. You know, there's one psychic phase taken care of.
That's a great point. I don't know how many times I guess I'll add 10 Misericordias in here.
Yeah, exactly right. It happens all the time. I love it. I hope they do a little bit more in the next book. Or they have a few more options that they can play off, because it's so awkward. I've seen people play with 30 points down because they've run out of just stuff they can put on.
They've run out of Misericordia bits.
Everyone's got a Misericordia. Everyone's got a Storm Shield. You can take a Storm Shield and a Sentinel Blade. Everybody's on a bike with whatever weapons cost the most at the time, because sometimes back then the Salvo launches cost a bit more than the Hurricanes. And yeah, you're just like, oh, I guess I'm playing 30 points down. And you're like, that feels bad.
That actually does happen a lot with elite armies, though. You'll see a lot of things. Well, maybe not 30 points, but you'll see things come in 10 points, 8 points.
Yeah. Yeah, 8 points is not unusual. I see people playing 5 points down like all the time now, to be honest.
That drives me nuts. I'm so OCD. I'm so OCD.
Yeah, it's like, what am I giving up? What have I not squeezed out of this? Yeah. It would have gotten me right at 2000.
The only time I'd ever do it is I'm going to a tournament like with 1999 points. I'm like, okay, if I lose, because I'm down a point. That's all it is.
That's right. What's a shuriken pistol you can add somewhere? Or a
there's got to be something. Like pick up a rock. It's got to be worth a point.
I think it might even say in the rule book, rocks are free.
Rocks
are free. It does.
It's those bricks. Those bricks will cost you a point.
Bricks, yes. Right. You need a concrete brick.
That's right. You need to upgrade.
You're 40,000 concrete brick. Those are rough, man.
That is fun. Yeah, Custodes, I think they're doing very strong, and that's another thing that it's weird that maybe we're overcalling the Grey Knights here. But
yeah, I think we are and we aren't. I don't think so. I don't think Grey Knights will have longevity like things like I think Sisters Admech Drakari will have, just because I don't think they have the depths of unit choices. I think there will come a time where people just take enough, people just allocate 400 points of anti-psychic whatever to their lists, and that's enough to take the top off their efficiencies.
To basically cut their mortal wound generation, what they were banking on it by a third or a half, like you were saying, and then
stop them from being stop what they're doing from being overwhelming. And same for T-Suns. I think there is a number there that we'll come to. I think they're very good. Yeah. I'm really happy with both codexes, by the way. I think both of those codexes are phenomenally exciting for both those player groups.
This is what I know people don't like, is when they feel like they cannot compete in a segment. You know, they brought nothing to defend against XYZ type of thing. And so the next time that they show up to the game table, they have something in their list to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good way of putting it. Like, you just kind of get a bad touch because you don't know to allocate for it yet. You don't know to plan for it yet.
Yeah. That's why you got to go to tournaments. You got to play games, because you can theorycraft all you want. There's always going to be something you don't anticipate. Always.
Well, when I saw the T-Suns Codex, I didn't see as much power in it as I'm hearing from people. People are telling me just how well it does. Because its shooting profiles are really good into all the best armies at the moment. So many toughness 3 bodies right now, and the Soul Reaper cannons are just so good. On top of that, you've just got so much -2 and mass that you can't be bad into Marines. You're just good into Marines just by default. And then I underestimated how many mortals they could put up. I really did. I thought it was going to be somewhere around kind of where they were, but maybe a few more because of the Cabal points. And I usually see like the combination of a couple of DPs, Armin and co, that people would sub in an old Supreme Command in 8th edition. You do like some on a good turn, you do somewhere like 15, and people are telling me they're getting like high 20s. You know,
oh wow,
like, that's
if you roll decently, that's like it definitely happened.
And their shooting is not bad. So that's actually a they're basically getting 2 shooting phases.
Yeah. Exactly right. And they had this beautiful resource management opportunity. And T-Suns is, I don't think it's a list or a faction you can just pick up and be good with. I think they're one of those true, the more you play it, the better you get at it, the more rewarding it becomes. And I'm saying that a lot more with 9th edition Codex than I did with 8th edition. Just because I think in 8th edition it was really clear where the power was, because it was like there was a combination of 5 stratagems in 8th edition. And you'd be like, these are the 5 strats that will make my army good. I'm going to take the units that get the best use out of them. And that was your army almost. Or at least that was like, 1,400 points of it. Now it's a lot simpler because we're only using single factions the vast majority of the time, which I love. I prefer. But it's the questions are more nuanced rather than just kind of yes, no-ish, if that makes sense, guys.
Yeah, no, I think I know what you're talking about. But you're right, too, with the complicated
couple could have said like some of the newer codexes, but I love that because it makes it so nobody can just pick up T-Suns and be like, all right, I am now the best T-Suns player or as good as the best T-Suns player in the world. There's no way you could do that now. Not with like any army.
Well, yeah, exactly right. You saw it in 8th edition a lot. You saw top players jumping around and they were just as good as with this army as the last one and the next one and the next one. And you're absolutely right. That's not the case, I don't think. I don't think that is the case this edition. I think you actually, the current best guy in the ITC, you know, and what we consider possibly one of the best players in the world, John Lennon, he's played Sisters for the last like 6 or 7 events. Exactly. Hasn't even considered playing anything else for quite a few months. What does that tell you? That tells you there's a reward for investment there. And I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really explore that. These codexes, I mean, they do. They got some depth to them to where they're that's one of the, I think, the hallmarks of the codex we've seen specifically for this edition is that they have some flexibility to where you can really find what is great for right now. And then when things change, you've got a little bit of more gas in the tank, more things to explore.
Absolutely. And I suppose that's what G-Dub's done that by design, because they're deterring you from wanting to take allies. So they need to make the one codex more diverse. And I think they're doing a great job. Like, you know, we're seeing, I mean, we haven't seen Horde Dark Elder yet, but I think we've seen every flavor of AdMech so far. We've seen Horde AdMech, we've seen Mech AdMech, we've seen MSU AdMech, we've seen everything in between as well. So definitely a testament there. I've yet to see Horde Sisters. I've only really seen MSU Sisters and a little bit of Mech Sisters.
That's a good point.
I've definitely seen some Horde Sisters. They didn't do as well as you'd think they would. They have some good tricks with it too, like ignoring AP 1 and 2 cross army with the massive battle sisters. Like that's actually really good, especially right now. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody started bringing that with the after Manny does really well with his 100 Rangers at London, right? Yeah. So.
Well, we're talking briefly about things being kind of cyclical, and on the recording we just did, we talked about how like Volkite cannons may be on the decline. You know, let's explore that a bit.
Yeah, I'm done with that for sure.
There's been two. So for those who don't know, Volkite Contemptor, a relic Volkite, relic Contemptor Dreadnought with two Volkite culverins has been one of the mainstay best in slot options for Imperial armies and Chaos Space Marine armies alike, or Chaos Super Faction armies alike.
Do you have the profile handy to run down the weapon profile?
Yeah, so you have two of these per one, and it's 8 shots, strength 6, no rend, 2 damage. Every 6 to wound is a mortal wound in addition.
Yeah, and so that's so 2 cannons, so yeah, 16 shots.
Yeah, 16 shots, has a perfect density of shots for, and I'm going to say I put it out, slaughtering toughness 3 infantry, has a fantastic profile for killing things like Raiders and Iron Strider Bellastari, these toughness 6 platforms, toughness 5 platforms, phenomenally good profile there. It's got the 2 damage to still be relevant versus things like Marines, like you're still putting up Marines on like a unit of intercessors that you kill 3 or 4. And then it's got the cherry on top that if you are a super durable option, things like a Talos or a Kronos, or I mean, possibly a bad example because I got to feel no pain, or things like a Terminator body, you have just this opportunity cost of spiking some mortal wounds that you still squeeze some damage through. So it was kind of amazing against the best things and still good against everything else.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so now
it's an all router unit.
What we've seen within this last couple of weeks or so is maybe their density in the field going down, possibly because the effectiveness is going down.
Yeah, so there's two factions that have come into the field that have really hurt that profile. One of them's Orcs. And either you guys know why Orcs has? Because you'd think Orcs, people are playing a lot of buggies, which is toughness 6, e.g. be good for that profile. But why? Yeah. What is it about Orcs that makes it bad?
Toughness 6 and 4 up save, it should be great against the Raiders. It's all -1 damage if you're not strength 8 or more.
Exactly right. Exactly.
So its effectiveness is literally cut in half.
And so most of the buggies people are playing are 9 wounds. So it's, you actually, when you break it down, unless you're spiking the mortals, you need 2, maybe 3 of them to kill one buggy, and that's not good return.
Well, they come on a dreadnought body, which is not actually a ton of points. I think that the body it comes on is,
I want to say it's 40 points because I think they're 5 or 10 point upgrade each.
No, I meant the whole dreadnought that it comes, not the buggy. The dreadnought's 180 points or something
it's
like that.
It's 150 with both of them.
150.
Effects. Yeah.
So and they're like they're 5 or 10 points apiece. So I think it's either 130 or 140 points for the chassis.
Yeah, but you want them to to basically erase whatever they shoot at. And so if that doesn't happen, then you haven't reduced the effectiveness of your opponent's army, and they're probably going to overwhelm you the next turn.
But see, it's another thing with the Volkites too, is because when people bring Volkites, almost every single time they're bringing them because there is something in their army that they can do to the Volkite to make it just a little bit better. Either it's to get plus one to hit, if it's ignoring the damage reduction or the hit modifiers, there's always something that they're bringing to make the Volkite better. And that's the other reason that I think they're going to start to be on the decline right now too, because you're now investing in something that is not going to be giving you a return investment most of the matches you're going to go into.
And exactly right, this is the thing, it's not just a one package deal. There are some armies, like if you were to put one or two of these into any Space Marine army, it would just be good because you get Dev Doctrine and it's just cool. That's good enough. You just innately have a one turn of the game, they're going to be, you know, a bit better. But then you have things like Ultramarines, who can give them rerolls to wound against selected units. You have things like a Tallyman for Death Guard to give them plus one to hit. You have things like T-Sons, who can give one of them an extra rend, etc. Oh, sorry, the Tallyman can also give it exploding sixes. When you talk about, this is the other reason that orcs are bad, is also that firstly the Ramshackle, damage one, and also most people are taking a Death Skulls detachment in their orc lists. And Death Skulls, of course, gives obsec, and also gives you that 5+ feel no pain against mortals. And so, well, I consider Death Skulls to be the best of the clans, just because I think obsec is just so phenomenally powerful. And on top of that, you're telling me there's a cherry on top, that if I'm playing T-Sons, Grey Knights, these mortal wound spamming armies, I also get a 5+. My God, what a value package. Yeah. For just getting, making sure you stay on the board and you keep getting points. Yeah, and the other one for that is Grey Knights. And I think Grey Knights are very bad for the Volkite profile for a couple of reasons. The first and foremost is there's no rend on those unless you give something to the Volkites, easy a Dev Doctrine equivalent.
So you're not getting through 3+ very, very often in cover or Terminators.
So first of all, you're not getting through the armor, and then keep going at them.
So there's a tide that Grey Knights have called the Tide of Shadows. And if you are not in cover, you have the benefits of light cover anywhere on the board. Just you could be standing and like 12 inches from any terrain piece, you still get +1 to your save. Shooting into an innate 2+ armor save or a 1+ on the Terminator or whatnot is just a horrible prospect.
Yep.
And in addition, they have that same 5+ feel no pain built into their entire army, everything.
Yep.
And so it's just like, what am I going to do? I'm lucky if I kill a Strike Marine. If I kill a Strike Marine with my 150 point Contempt of Dreadnought, that's costing me a CP, by the way, because it's a relic. And we didn't unpack that as well, because that's another big downside. People are actually giving up efficiencies to take this, because that's how good it was. That's how good it was. It was worth. And now I'm just thinking, like, there are just some matchups where it just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, there's too many matchups that doesn't do anything now. The thing is, too, it's not going to do anything on turn one a lot of the time if you're getting good terrain or if it's exactly. Your opponent doesn't poke out or anything. So it's already going to be less effective one turn. The only, the best thing about this, I will say, is that it is actually really a pain in the butt to kill, but a lot of people don't really need to kill it because they don't worry about it. I think a lot of people are being a little too passive with it. They need to be moving forward with that. Like, get it tied up. Who cares? Like, it can still shoot into combat if you really need it to. Unless you're getting real value of it in the matchup you're in, use it aggressively. Put it on some forward objectives. Make them have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think we drop down. I think if people are taking two or three of them in their list at the moment, drop down to one for a little bit, at least until the meta stabilizes and we get an idea of just how many of these are, or how prevalent Grey Knights and Orcs are going to be for the next couple of months. Because as it sits right now, I think Grey Knights are going to be, well, we've already seen in some of the stats that we do on the other show we're on, Grey Knights are hugely popular.
That's, you know, my what? Call for also, doing well at the next the New Orleans US Open Series. Mm. It's going to be Grey Knights and Orcs. I think that's a strong call saying that Grey Knights are going to be two of the top five.
Yeah. Why do you think Grey Knights are so prevalent, Paul? I mean, you said this on a number of podcasts, but you said it so well. Let's dial it up again.
Oh, no.
I believe it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, because you're playing with figures you had in 5th edition. So if you already had a Grey Knight army, you basically just get to, you know, take it off the shelf and you've got your 80% two. What is the most efficient list, in my opinion, right now?
So it's the same as every Orc player who bought two or three of the speed wire boxes. They're just like, ha ha, my day has come. Let's dial this up. Let's go.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this stuff. And then, you know, kind of so now that we've diagnosed, you know, maybe what you're going to see, and I really do believe this, we'll talk about what you can maybe do against it. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Please check out our sponsors and like us on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. Follow me on Twitter. We're creating this menace, this Grey Knight and Orc, this midfield control menace, which I do think is going to surface and be something that people have to deal with. Could easily also lead, weirdly enough, open up the door for like Chaos Knights.
Yep.
But how do people deal with it then?
Well, it depends on who you are. Every army has answers. I will say that for sure. Every army has answers.
So
we want to start with Grey Knights. We want to start with Orcs.
Yeah. So what are some things that maybe have taken a sideline because that midfield game wasn't as much of an issue? It was either a standoff and shoot, or you know, or the game that Drukhari were playing with basically make your opponent waste their first turn and then come over the top and fire away kind of thing. You know, now we might see a little bit of a scrum and how to make that go to in your favor. We talked about like rock saws or whatever in the
rock cutters, rock briefly cutters, during the break. Paul.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
So I always love these things. It's, you're looking for stronger weapons that have a good, not necessarily good AP, but strength 8 to deal with all the ramshackle stuff. Cause all this -1 damage, there's so much of it that's coming out there now. 2 damaged weapons are hard to get value out of. And we were kind of saying,
if you pay for that damage too,
if
there's any kind of points seemingly associated to that damage too, it's like a tax almost right now.
Yes, exactly. It absolutely is. Like auto cannons right now, I would be shocked to see a lot of auto cannon Ballistarius now with what the meta is looking like, because the Lascans are so much better from point for point for most matchups. But yeah, if you're paying for that 2 damage, it is hard to get the points back for a lot of the time. So you're looking for something that is not going to be costing you too many points to get that upgrade. Like, well, that's why we're talking about rock saws, rock cutters. It's 10 points for strength 8, -4, 2 damage weapon. Like, it's just so valuable because no minus to hit on the rock saws. And it's just, it ignores ramshackle. It still does its 2 damage, -4. So there's no saves on those things like with the buggies. It's things like that. Or you're looking at mass fire that doesn't care about -1 damage because it's 1 damage already. Right. So you want to make sure that you get point for point. You want as much value as you can into the targets. And it's not always about what you bring in the army. It's also about what you shoot each weapon at.
So the 2 profiles that I think are kind of out there at the moment that I think lose a lot of value versus things with the ramshackle rule is autocannons. Well, I'm talking about the ramshackle rule. Most of the profiles that is attached to are toughness 6. So that's the buggies, that's the planes, that's the transports, that is in the trucks. The vast majority is toughness 6. The only thing that's a really exception to that will be if they've got the rigs. What are the rigs called? The war rigs?
Kill rigs?
Kill rigs.
Oh, yes.
I was watching Fury Road last night. War rigs. Such a good movie. Holy, oh my God, it's still such a good movie. Yeah, if you got the kill rigs, if they're the toughness 8 profile, you might want to worry about that. But the vast majority will be toughness 6. And so auto cannons are no good, because usually auto cannons come with either a 10 or 20 point price point. Yep. And then you're losing that strength. That strength is meaningless. So you might as well be strength, might as well be whatever, it doesn't matter. The only perk you get there is you wound them on 3s. And the other one that's actually totally horrible here is heavy bolters. Wounding them on 5s with only 1 rend and going down to 1 damage, horrifically bad.
That's almost like heavy bolters were before the upgrade.
It's almost like they're still exactly the same.
Old school heavy bolters are back, you know? You don't see that many of them anymore. You really don't.
That's right, yeah. Well, they started falling off wholesale when, Death Guard came out, because they were just so bad there. But they're still bad now. I kind of like them a bit into Dark Elder, because I still like they gave you enough value versus things like Raiders if you had enough of them. On things like Talon Masters, it was fine. But I really like Assault Cannon profiles. I think they're very good. I think we may see the resurgence of things like Plasma Inceptors, because these Orc armies generally don't have a huge amount of screens, and their screens aren't all that resilient. Usually it's just a toughness 5 body with a t-shirt safe. You can usually just push enough bolters through that you get them. And then Deep Striking 3 Plasma Inceptors is enough to kill a buggy or a buggy and a half very easily if you're willing to overcharge it. But then you come into some issues in activating that play or play similar to that, because you can do things similar to that with a lot of different things, like Retributors from coming in from outflank can do similar stuff. There's a bunch of stuff Tyranids can do coming in from outflank as well.
Do you think on the Inceptors a bit, do you think the Inceptors, like, are they just kind of a one use? You mean get them down and they just kill one thing and then don't they just get picked up? How do you protect them?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of things you can do to keep them safe. As a Dark Angels player, I'll tell you right now, if you can get Azrael into a viable position, you can deep strike down into his 4+ invuln bubble, which is very good. The Gravis armor has 2 of being Primaris already and then being Gravis Armor has two of the best defensive stratagems available to Space Marines, that being the plus one save if it's damage one against big shooters and things of that ilk. You can be winning on fours and have a two plus, so you don't really care. And then you have Transhuman for the strength eight things from the rocket trucks. Sorry, strength five from the rocket trucks, strength eight from the rockets on the, what is it, the
scrap jets.
Scrap jets. So you do have two applicable profiles and then a four plus inbound to fall back upon. And then, you know, Azrael gives you your rear one bubbles.
Okay,
so
not everybody has Azrael, not everybody.
That's what I mean. So there are ways, but I'm saying there's ways. If you're willing to look into it, there are ways that you can try and make these not one use. If they are going to be one use, you got to make sure you get rid of the ones that trouble you. And the ones that trouble you generally are the squig buggies. And that's what I mean. If you can go down and just kill the squig buggies, even if you're trading down in points, you're trading up in efficiencies, is what I'm trying to get at. And that's how you kind of have to use it. You can go like for like, though. Like, I think Guard can go like for like with the buggies, and it's just a trail of who goes first and whatnot, because Manticores are a phenomenally good profile. Mm-hmm. Phenomenally good profile into buggies, being the strength 10, the minus 2, to take them to their 6 up or a, you know, an invuln if they manage to get one.
Well, and funny enough, the Guard are actually better against the buggies because buggies are going to be wounding them on 5s, right? Mm-hmm. So the Guard actually had the advantage in that.
That's what I mean. Yeah, if you take two payload Manticores, you can just take whatever you want in the rest of it, and you know that that matchup, you've got some reliability to fall back upon. On top of that, you want to be an absolute baller and take two Hunter Killer missiles on that bad boy, and then just like ice another one with a 6 damage Hunter Killer.
Do not, no one take Hunter Killer missiles. They never hit.
Don't do that.
That's right. But one CP, if you can see them, you can hit them with a plus one. So you can hit them on threes. You can get reroll ones there as well. So you can make it a bit more reliable.
Oh, but, I'm kidding. That was the stick with old Hunter Killer missiles used to just never hit. You know, it didn't make any sense mathematically. They just seemed to never hit.
Well, it's so funny the tropes people come up with about their armies. Like, I used to hear such bad things about Dark Lances. Like, people are like, I bought a 20-point Dark Lance. It hit once this game. And then I play against Dark Eldar opponents and I lose like three repulses turn one to Dark Lances. I'm like, you guys are all full of it. You're all lying and you're all cahoots into the same in-joke because you're all bounce off each other. And you're all... it's just these funny little tropes we pick up along the way. I love the stories behind them as well. But
Everyone out... I know people listening right now. They're like, yes, he's exactly right. The 100-killer missile had unlimited range. Ultimate weapon. Never hit.
Dustin.
Yes.
A Hive Guard any good here?
They are good if they can go first, but they just die once they speed walk. They just die.
That's what I was thinking as well. Is there any
negative
way to make
three? Doesn't matter if you have adaptation, you just get wrecked by it. It's painful. It is very painful. If you go first, you can kill, you know, a buggy or two. That's about it.
Yeah, it's so you're winning on fours, you got good rend, but only D3 damage. The minus one really, really hurts.
You're winning on threes. They're strength eight.
What, really? The impaler cannons. Oh, not the impaler cannons. The no line of sight guns. Really? Yeah,
that's the impaler cannons.
Oh, of course they are. Sorry, what am I thinking about?
What are you thinking about?
He's thinking it's been a while since he's seen a Hive Guard.
D3.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's been a while. never heard of him. But there are a lot of options out there. Like, I mean, Grey Knights are actually pretty good at this. Like, you gate over one Dreadknight, you pick up two buggies pretty reliably.
Yep.
And then if you manage to get the charge in, cool, you've got a third one. And the Dreadknight's got a pretty decent profile of striking them off. It's only toughness 6, so a lot of those guns do get good return for investment. But, you know, the big shooters don't bother you whatsoever. 4-plus invulnerable save can really spike and get you a lot of places. And, on top of that, all the guns, like the psi cannons, the silencers, they're not great, but actually, no, the more I think about it, there are some downsides here. All the damage 2 weapons all go to damage 1 in combat. Silencers wound them on 5s with minus 1 damage is not great. Yeah, actually might be a trouble. That might be a problem matchup for Grey Knights, those two going head-to-head.
They do have Hammerhand, so the rerolling wounds kind of helps them a little bit with that.
Yeah, it's fair. But, I mean, the buggies are so cheap. They're only 90 points a pop. It's actually kind of crazy.
Oh, it's ridiculous how cheap they are. It's absolutely ridiculous. But it's not even a matter of killing them with the Grey Knights. If they're not Blood Axes, tagging them is enough.
That's true. And that's the other thing we're going to talk about. If you can just sling into them and just get them shut down, get them tapped, get them wrapped, a lot of the best guns, like the rocket trucks, are all only got blast, and they're not great in combat. Things like the blaster jets or whatever the ones with the rocket wings, cannons, whatever it is, they're not bad in combat, but they've only got 4 or 5 attacks. So, you know, they're going to miss with a couple.
They're all decent. They're still doing like -2 damage. Like, they actually do quite a bit of hitting on fours. They're not bad. Yeah,
they've only got a handful of attacks, though. They're not like dumping 10 attacks on you apiece.
No, no, no.
And so running up and tagging them with things like Guardsmen, with things like Hormigons, Termigons, you know, whatever it may be, getting there quick, shut them down, is a very viable option.
Yeah, for sure. Like, tagging them is the best option for a lot of things. Just something that can survive the hit back, even if you just force them to retreat, that's fine. Because most of them, in fact, I could almost say all of them are not taking Weird Boys right now, just because they don't need them. So they're not going to be able to smite them out.
And that's an interesting thing for them, because they get the opportunity to take a Boar the Witch. Now, there are some in that Psychic matchup, and this is what I think what this is going to do. This is these two armies, T-Suns and Grey Knights, I think are going to really polarize whether or not you can take your pocket Psychic, your little Psychic, one or two of them in your list. Because losing the ability to take a Boar the Witch and facing Psychic heavy armies just means your ability to get cast off is vastly diminished, and you don't get the opportunity cost to take the kill points against Psychic.
To casually pick up the points.
Deal. Exactly. Exactly right, man. And I feel like the people, unless you have a ridiculously good reason, you're just not going to see them.
Yeah. I think it's one of the. But so hear me out with this. We're talking about tagging these folks. 15-man Death Company.
There it is. Just tag the entire buggy line.
Yeah. Why tag one when you can tag them all? Yeah,
Death Company don't tag. Death Company don't tag, man.
They don't really.
That's not even in the vernacular. Leave that for that's the assault squad's lingo.
Well, they have to kill something so badly that if they don't kill anything when they charge, they have to kill themselves afterwards. Okay, I know. I have to see some blood.
Let's go down this rabbit hole, though. If you were just going to take him to tag stuff, what would you do? Just bare bones, bolt pistol, chainsword?
Yeah, I mean, coming in with like six attacks apiece, you're actually not tagging anything. You're probably going to kill most things even just with your chainswords.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. You're winning him on fours with rend one, taking to a 5+ save, 9 wounds apiece. Man, five Death Company with just chainswords pretty reliably kill a buggy.
Well, the reason I say so many is because the Forlorn Fury stratagem, so make the most of it. Like if this is very streaky and go first dependent. Let's say the strategy only works half the time. But when you are able to just so radically influence how maybe they would normally deploy, you might already be getting the edge up on the game. And I'll be honest, you really can't get away from Forlorn, from Jump Pack Death Company with Forlorn Fury.
Nah, deployed centrally, they're going to get you wherever you may be. They're going to get something about you. You can hide your best stuff, but they're going to get something good. They're going to get a pound of flesh. I actually love the idea of just like a five man with a couple of Fists or Thunderhammers. Just go in.
Too small. 15.
But see, that's not a tag unit, Paul.
That's definitely not a tag unit. That's to kill everything they touch.
But you'll know you've been tagged.
Against the buggies, because then you're going to be getting full shots with all their buggies because you're over 11.
Yeah, well, see, the only issue I find and the only fear I'd have with only having a five man is you are just susceptible to an Overwatch. Like, you just are. The guy pops the Overwatch, spikes two dead dudes, and you're like, oh, wow. The amount of damage I was going to do just went down considerably. Two Death Watch kills a buggy. Two Death Watch Thunderhammers kill a buggy, right? That's like, is that four attacks apiece? Five attacks apiece?
On which ones?
The Thunderhammers.
Yep. No, I mean, on which units? Yes, it's four or five attacks apiece, but I was curious if just trying to diagnose it was four or five.
The buggies.
Each Thunderhammer from a Death Company would be four each.
Said Death Watch for a second. I'm like, which troops are you talking about now?
I'll say Death Wing next time, just to really confuse
you. Oh yeah, this is really going to get complicated.
But no, you're right. That if you just took that unit, you just go in and just be like, all I need to do is just get rid of the Rucker Trucks. I can go mono and mono if I need to with the rest. I'm going to go in and pick up three Rucker Trucks out of the four or five they've got. Yep. And that's fine. That's totally fine.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty good trade. We talk about this, like what we just, if you were talking about a 15-man Death Company with a few Thunderhammers, you're talking about a 400-point unit. You got to get work done out of them.
Yeah, and if you go second, that's a 400-point hole possibly.
Go second.
God knows if you go... All right, playing against the Death Company, they're full-on up into your face, they're 12 inches away, and you go first, and you're like, they're fine, I won't shoot them this turn.
No problem.
Suicidal. No quicker way to suicide.
If you see someone moving 15-plus... black and red armored blood angels up into your grill, and you decide, you don't know what they are, and maybe you think about shooting somewhere else, ask your opponent what their rules are. It may help you realign your priorities.
By the end of them speaking, you'll be convinced.
You're like, you know what? I think we're gonna. I think we're gonna target them.
We should do it.
Yeah.
I do like the rest. I do like a lot of the marine profiles into things. I like the ability to transhuman against a lot of the strength 8. I like the 4+ invulns that you get on a lot of the Vanguard veterans and Blade Guard and stuff. I just don't like the melee output. I feel like the melee output from things like Blade Guard and things like Sanguard isn't as great. I feel like you almost just want to have a power sword again.
What you were talking about with Vanguard vets is actually a good thing for people that don't have access to the Death Company or whatever to use, because any Marines get that, and that's another good counter for these buggies and stuff, because they get that strength 8 threshold.
Yeah, really quickly. Or you take Lightning Claws and you just get the rerolls. Just don't worry about it. And so, yeah. What I was saying before is I'm a really big fan of the Assault Cannon profile at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can take a Mass Assault Cannon profile, it's only gotten better. Like, because I was talking about how good it was against things like, you know, Sisters Drakari Admech, because of all the toughness 3 bodies on the infantry. You just pick up their obsec really quickly. And on top of that, your strength 6 to get really good into Raiders and Ballistari, like I said before.
They got a good price to power value on those things.
Yeah, just the amount of shots you get. 6 shots with a couple of rerolls. You're just going to do some damage. And they've only gotten better. Because all the rocket trucks have just given you value. So firstly, they're great into orc infantry. Rend 1 is all the rend you need into a boy, you know? Stay no more. Rend 1.
Rend and, all is what that is.
And more than strength 5. So strength 6, rend 1. Perfect profile for killing orc boys, commandos, storm boys, whatever you want to be. It's also a great profile into the rocket, into all the buggies. Could you wind them on 4s and taking them to a 5+ save is pretty good. Dev Doctrine taking them to a 6+, that's absolutely fantastic.
Well, with that same mentality, are like shirking cannons good again? Or
yeah, dude, absolutely.
Scatter lasers?
Shuriken cannon scatter lasers, I think, are all on the up. And especially the Night Spinners. They're losing a damage. I was about to say, they're losing a damage is the issue.
You do pay for that D2.
You do pay exactly.
They're too inconsistent, I find. Especially right now. 2d6 shots, it's usually 5 shots. Let's be honest.
Warwalkers. Hey, Warwalkers.
Love Warwalkers. I think
that's all of a sudden that sounds cheap. I don't know how many points that has been in my head.
No, I think they are kind of expensive when you put the weapons on there. But they Warwalkers are one of those units that have been pretty good for about 30 years.
Yes, they've never been horrible and never been incredible.
Yeah. Although there was actually a time when they were pretty incredible. But that was I think 4th or 5th edition or whatever. They were pretty darn good.
And they have inbuilt outflank as well, so they're going to be you're going to get to use them. You're going to get some value, which I like. I like a lot.
Yeah.
But you're right. The spinners and the shadow weavers, it's the right strength, and the sixes to wound rend means they just don't get a save. But losing the damage that you're paying a lot of premium for, it feels pretty bad.
Yeah. I used to love them. I still do. They still get some value in some matchups. You feel like they should be as good as, if not better, since they're more expensive than a squig buggy, but they're not.
They're not.
It's
140 points for a Night Spinner, I think.
Yeah, 145, I think.
Yikes.
That's almost that's a buggy and a half. One buggy. Like, I don't know, man.
So let's transition and talk about Grey Knights if you want, guys. Yeah. Because there's a couple of really good things. So for the linear power and the awesomeness that Grey Knights have, they do have some holes.
I want to say 15 Death Company with Thunderhammers work pretty well against Grey Knights also.
Well, I guess we have the answer to everything, guys. Just bring 15 Thunderhammers.
Go first with 15 Death Company. Man.
That's all you have to do. Go first with 15
Death Company. That's it. Case closed.
Case closed, everybody.
Pack up. Go home. That's it.
You are welcome.
So Grey Knights have a couple of holes, and one of those holes is the fact they don't have any access to, they have very limited access to fights first and fights last. So things that you have, like, you know, your Stench Vats, Malignant, whatever he's called,
like the playcaster,
the guy with the Stench Vats, whatever, you know, the one with the flamer, the guy who makes everybody, you know, fights last or don't think it's charging. Armor of Russ is another good one. Lots of fights first from things like, you know, Cult of Strife. I don't want to advocate Dark Elder, but they do have a lot of good tools. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought the best army in the game would have a lot of good tools?
Yeah.
Same as their Archon, they could do that. I'm not gonna say run out and grab your just any old what's the fight's last guy, Judicia,
yep,
whatever.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But if you are one of the factions that can give him a 6+ heroic intervention, that is a fair as a unit they must respect. That you must take that into account.
Oh, like Space Wolves or something like that?
Space Wolves can do it. Black Templars can do it. There's a couple of other guys who have Warlord traits or stratagems that let you get a better heroic intervention. intervention, or if you can take those units and have aggressive implementations for it, like, you know, for your white scars with advance and charge, you can just sling that bad boy across the table and shut down one combat, so you know you get to fight first there and then charge into another combat first. That's very powerful as well. Calyxus Assassins, they have the stratagem to fight last. Kari Adraxis has flights last. Things like this that just give you the ability to engage on more than one front against this army, because this army is going to be pretty, it's going to be like maneuvering, maneuvering, swamp. Either that or they're going to be very surgical, like a sister's army would be, you know, sending in a dreadnought, sending in some interceptors. What you want to do is you want to flip the script. You want to be like, well, all right, Brody, if you come in here, this bit's defended by a flights last aura, so you have to trade, or you have to come in and not trade, so you have to commit somewhere else as well.
Or overcommit, double commit.
Yeah. Double, triple down. And then in the case, are you going to win? I've got some transhumans here that are going to flip some things around as well. I've got some other options as well. Or that you're going to sit back and I'm going to bring this, you know, this flight's last to your doorstep, and I'm going to have things on my terms, and there's not much you can do about it. And so I like those options a lot. Is there any flights first, flight's last for the Hive Mind super faction?
Yeah, we've got two powers. We got Paroxysm and we got Mass Hypnosis. Both of those are fight to light blast. There's a couple fight first too. There's a Kraken Warlord trait. So they got a couple for sure.
What you said there.
We can deal with Grey Knights.
I'm not sure you can.
No problem. Piece of cake.
You said that both of the fights last you said are on psychic powers.
Yeah, doesn't matter. We supercast those. It's fine. Listen, gray tastes just the same as any other color, right?
I love your optimism.
I do admire this optimism.
I love it.
Not going to tell you you're wrong.
For those who don't know, Grey Knights have plus one to deny. And every bloody thing in their army is a psyker. So if you're in range to put that on them, they're in range to deny you. And they have a psychic power to deny you on three dice. And if they really need to, they're probably pretty likely to stop you. Do you have any ability to force those through?
Oh, God, no. We do.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, I was like, unless I haven't heard
of Adam is leading the witness.
a little entrapping.
We have to be able to, we just to stay out of range of your denies and put the fight first on our guys. That's what we have
to do. Yes, that's, you have to look at it, you have to front load it rather than back load it. But yeah, there are a lot of armies here that can make that a bit more palatable. Like I said, Death Guard's a great one for having fights last here, there, and everywhere. And on top of that, they're a bad prospect for them with the minus one damage coming in. I mean, Hammerhand shores that up a fair bit, but you can have a couple of casts as well. The only thing I don't like about the Death Guard matchup is Death Guard generally always have to bring a Psyker to fill out enough HQ slots for things like battalions.
Well, I don't want Dustin's comment to be seen as a throwaway one either, you know, about the really being cognizant of the deny range of your opponent, even if not if they're playing it. If they have any Psyker, if you don't have to move up within range to cast and give them any shot at denying, then don't. And you get to control that. Or I should say, you don't always get to control that. But if you can't control it, then do control it.
Now, so there are some armies that I'm really concerned about these matchups. Like, I have no idea how Tau hangs with Grey Knights or with Orcs. Do you know what's tragic? Do you know what's really sad? Just putting it out there. Orcs are a better shooting. Orcs are a more relevant shooting army than Tau, I feel, in this current game.
Well,
yeah, they are.
That's pretty much always been the case.
Yeah. They're just more prevalent right now, so you notice the Orcs more.
I shouldn't say always been the case.
Tau actually do have the tools to shoot out Grey Knights if they take the right ones. It's just a matter of they do take the right ones, and I think their range is a little shorter on the guns they want to take with them. That's the other problem.
There's always been this weird polarity with Tau where, like, some of the, you can't really take the right guns for every matchup. Yeah. And sometimes if you do take the right guns for the right matchup, the range just doesn't seem to be right for the terrain or the, like, all right, cool, you got SMS, but there's 30 inches and we're playing Hammer and Anvil against Guard. And so they just get to shoot you twice before you get in range or whatnot, or stuff like that. I just have no idea how Tau, I don't know how Tau tend to T-Suns either. What does Tau put out in front of you? You taking 40 crit in your list now?
I guess you have to, right?
Models? Like, yeah, it's rough.
Devilfish. I mean, the same thing applies. I mean, or the, what's the little speeder things? The piranhas?
Piranhas.
I can be down with that. That makes sense. They're pretty cheap, and they still can do some damage out there. And, you know, I think Devilfish are actually great to have some breachers in there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of breachers. Yeah, big fan.
It's like all the secondary weapons and stuff they can get on, and then it's kind of spread out. So if you're taking those things, you know, it alters your strategy a little bit to start spreading out what you put where to control, to get points, control objectives, and then eat smites.
Before anybody like goes off in the comments, I said more relevant shooting army, not better. Because like literally there's like a broadside, you know, point for point, gun for gun is like so good. It's probably better than a buggy because it has the line, no line of sight, and the straight shot guns and all that stuff.
Do little drone units suck up smites too, right? I guess
that's true. They do. Shield drones will still get a 5+ feel no pain against them as well, which
But they're so valuable elsewhere though. I wouldn't want to throw them away to those.
I need to look, but there's a 6+ feel no pain aura from Ethereals. If that works
Ethereals.
If that works on Kroot, that could be okay. Could just get just a little bit more efficiency out of the crew model. I can't remember if it does or doesn't. But yeah. Just throwing out ideas now, not fact checking.
Oh well no look, what we're discussing, I really do think that I don't want to overstate it, but also don't want to understate it, that I think that the injection of these things is going to change the face of how this midboard is played.
Exactly. How this midboard is played. Perfectly said, mate. Perfectly said. Because not a lot of these psychic powers have a better range than 24. 24 seems to be the max, and the vast majority live between the 12 and the 18 inches mark. And so it is the middle of the board where they get their efficiencies, at least for like the first three or four turns. So you're right. If you can get stuff in the middle of the board that either doesn't care because it's like a Sister of Silence or a Calexis, or stuff that's innately resilient with feel no pains or has its own inbuilt denies.
Or like 5 points a piece and you don't care if it gets evaporated.
Yeah, you stuff. You know, you get your crack out your conscripts and your cultists and your, you know, your brimstone horrors, and who cares? You know, whatever. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The midboard is where this is going to be won and lost.
Well, because I think these armies that we're talking about, not the orcs, but the Grey Knights specifically, they need that psychic phase to win games. And if you can essentially, I'm going to say deny, but that's a little too spot on. But if you blank that, you know, that's what we say when you they essentially don't get any value out of the phase or that turn, then you've got a huge advantage.
Yeah, spot on. Well, especially with T-Suns, right? If you were able to neuter or like you said, blank a psychic phase, they just become like a mediocre marine shooting army.
Yeah,
that's the thing with them. Green Knights, they still have a lot better close combat but Thousand Suns. If you can blank their psychic phase, like I've seen Thousand Suns fail on their psychic powers enough that they're not scary anymore. It's like, oh, I failed. Like half my powers. Like,
nice hat, Marine. And then
nice hat, Marine.
Yeah. There are some really interesting things you can do as well to make, just add some deterrence. Let's say you can't get a Calexis or you don't own one. There's a bunch of different, especially, I'm going to speak to Imperium. I'm assuming Tyranids have something similar. I know Demons do as well. There are a couple of little things where you can say, put out a bubble of 12 or 18 inches where it says, if you roll any doubles, it's a perils on your psyche tests. And so, although those with T-Suns and with Grey Knights putting out like sometimes 10 spells a turn, you're saying you're not going to roll two or three doubles a turn is just a fallacy. It's going to happen. And then Demons, can make a peril be 2d6 mortal wounds. And all of a sudden, you know, your chances to kill us just straight out kill like a librarian.
Like automatically, as soon as you perils, you make them take the extra damage, right?
Yeah, so, exactly right. What does Kronos do? Kronos does something similar, doesn't it?
Well, Kronos has a couple of things. They have a warlord trait that you'll take extra mortal wounds, and they also have their stratagem is if you're within 24 inches of any synapse, you just pay a CP, and you can only cast on 1d6.
Yeah, so, and it's almost like saying to your opponent, one quarter of the times you deal me damage, I'm going to deal you damage.
Yeah, there's actually another one in Blood of Balls. So they actually got another strat now that you have to do at the beginning of the psychic phase. So if you're within, I think, 12 inches of any synapse, anytime you don't successfully cast, you take D3 mortal wounds. Doesn't even say perils. It just says take D3 mortal wounds.
What that does is that really damages how many smites they want to try and throw.
Exactly.
Because it just ticks over. And Grey Knights as well, who can try and manifest powers more than once.
Yeah.
With the same detriments, you know, as the smite would.
Yeah. Well, that's actually the main problem with it too. Well, not problem, but that's the benefit of that, because it doesn't specify perils, because Grey Knights do have, I think it's a relic or warlord trait the librarian can take to, if anybody within 6 inches, if they peril, they don't peril.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And then we can see them to try and tech into the counters back and forth. But there's a little metagame here that we can start buying into, us non-psychic playing plebeians, so to speak. And we can start making them, you know, pay for the privilege, so to speak. But what I really don't like, I'm just going to put it out, this might be Adam's rant of the day, pariahs. What's up?
You mean, where are they?
Where are they? In the fluff,
Look, you got
Collectors
your...
assassins have the pariah gene that they got from pariahs somehow. You know? It's a thing. It was a thing before. And the fact that Necrons have built this whole shtick and this whole fluff base on being anti-warp, anti-psyker, and they're one of the weakest psyker, like anti-psyker lists out there, one of the weakest and least amount of depth. What's up? Come on.
I feel like Adam is trying to forge the narrative here.
That's what he says. Gloom prisons are not enough. He needs more.
That's exactly right. What else they've got? They've got gloom prisons in the and a stratagem that you get from Cesarican. And the Cesarican has a 5+ feel no pain. I think that's the extent of it.
Seems reasonable.
I think that's the extent of it. There might be some more tech in there I just haven't uncovered yet, because a lot of the cryptex have so many wonky little fun rules. It's really exciting. But I just don't understand why they just didn't get like pariahs. Like make them like blood brides or something. Like you can upgrade your lich guard to be pariahs. Maybe they lose the shield, have to take a war scythe,
in the universe.
They get like a -1/-2 to cast bubble from them if you take the war scythe and pay 2 more points per model or something. Come on, let's see it, baby.
I know we're wishlisting. We were talking. That's actually a great place to wrap up. We've hit time. It's been cool to think about how things will evolve, how once people are playing these factions more prevalently with the new codexes, and then what can just the average old everyday army take to hang in there.
Yeah, apologies if we didn't read off something your army can do. Like, I actually have no idea what knights can do outside taking, I think it's the Adeptus Mechanicus side. It can take the 5+ feel no pain against mortals. But apart from that, I'm not actually sure knights can do anything else to interact with the psyche phase.
They just kill the psychers.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially so if you've got like a Grey Knight player buddy or whatever, and you've ran up against him and something did or didn't work, let us know.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah, let us know what's working, what's not working, and what are your thoughts on how you're going to contend with this new, well, essentially it's a whole new psychic phase, because the one we had didn't matter anywhere near as much as this one.
This one's important. I want to hear it.
Dustin, thanks for jumping in with us, and Adam, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, man.
All mine.
We will see y'all very soon. Remember, tune in to the US Open Series live Twitch stream from Games Workshop on Warhammer TV, and then the next week after that, we'll be back with the show. See y'all.
See ya.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.